In today's quest, learn why playing it safe might not be so safe after all. This is the Quest for Power. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Quest for Power, where we are ranking and reviewing all of the European monarchs from the early Middle Ages to World War I. My name is Scott, and our co-host is...
I am Michael.
And once again, if you did not listen to our previous episode, you should absolutely go and check it out. We went over the battle that decided the fate of Europe between the Roman Alliance and Attila the Hun. It was quite the exciting episode, actually. And honestly, having the fact that we had a Lord of the Rings inspired character was something of a little bit of extra bonus points for me, because for once we're having something that is more in my realm of the area, except for, not Game of Thrones, right? Because I'm going to be the last holdout when hell freezes over. Is when I'll let that one go and probably watch it.
Oh, terrible. I have so many references because they constantly steal from history. I mean, but I loved it that we went through Attila the Hun. You always heard of Attila the Hun, but you never really got to know any of the story or how he was defeated. And to find out, like, there's a reason for that. Like, the battle just, there were so many conflicting opinions as to what actually happened.
Yeah, I've at least gathered a little bit of information, which fell out of the Swiss cheese holes of my head, because I like to listen to just random tidbits of things on YouTube. If it's got, like, some pretense of educational thought, it's probably something I'll, like, listen to, like, while I'm just existing. It might have been, like, an extra credits set of episodes or something.
Also, infotainment you're talking about, like, information, but it's entertainment. I love those.
Basically give me the spark notes. I'm trying to do multiple things here, and as viewers may have gathered, is that a lot of historical stuff kind of, it all happens in order for a reason. And if you're missing one piece, it feels like you're like, okay, I gotta rewind a bit, right? So,
and that's how you go into, like, a wormhole of rewinding until you get all the way to the dawn of time.
And then you realize that, like, you're just like, man, well, like, even just in the video, but eventually you just realize, like, man, maybe I should have just, like, instead of using this as a multitasking tool to fill the void of emptiness and of sound, instead I should have just basically sat down and just listened to this darn thing in its entirety. And maybe I would have understood a bit more granules of knowledge. I remember, like, the strokes, the broad strokes here and there, but I always feel like a lot of times that the spark notes at least help you get, like, the general gist of things. Nothing truly compares to, the full-blown, like, basically just reading a biography, right?
Yeah. The trick with those is that some of them are so dry. History loves to be dry, even though it really is exciting. It's just for some reason historians don't want to make it exciting, and it's really kind of hard to take what their information that they gave us and make it interesting.
Well, that's the tainment part of infotainment, right?
Yeah.
I think also there's probably a certain level of pride in the sense that it's like everyone has their thing, and sometimes, you know, nerds like to be nerds. And as long as there are people who know less than them, they're all right. They'll feel better.
All right. Are you ready for today's story?
As ready as I'll ever be.
All right. So before we begin, of course, we're going to start with our sources to prove that I kind of know what I'm talking about. Once again, we have Jordanes, and he actually has some good information this time. I've been dunking on him every episode. Granted, whether this is true or not, or is a mystery, because his version of the battle, which a lot of this information again comes from, conflicts with St. Gregory of Tours, who we went over last episode. And then our two secondary sources is our favorite Victorian Gibbon and The Story of Goths by Henry Bradley. All right, on to the main quest. So, despite being the son of a king, we just know nothing about his life. And this king, actually, that we are going over today is Thorismund. He is the son of... Wow, you would think I would remember.
Theodoric. I almost said Theodosius, but that's a different man.
No, he's been dead for a while. Thorismund, who is the son of Theodosius.
Theodoric.
Oh my God, you got me confused now.
Maybe people shouldn't have so many similar names.
This is terrible. So we know just about nothing about his life before he became king. Even Wikipedia didn't make anything up this time. Normally, Wikipedia makes some fun little story up, but I got nothing before this time. So what we do know is that he was born in the Balti dynasty after his father, Theodoric, who is not the great one, but the one we went over with last week. He probably received combat training, considering he led the charge to defeat Attila.
Either that, he's just a natural-born leader.
Yeah, he just woke up and he just came out of his mother's womb holding a sword, ready to go to battle.
Yeah, you know, all walks of life.
It takes all kinds. Thorismund first appears on the record during the Battle of Catalonian Plains, or the Battle of Chalons, I've also heard it. That we went into great detail last episode. And in case, Scott, you need a refresher, he leads this surprise thunderous charge down a hill to put Attila the Hun to flight when his father is suddenly struck from a dart from the Ostrogothic line.
Really sad. Like, a dart?
Yeah.
I know darts are lethal weapons, which actually is really funny because I know they're not exactly the same, but lawn darts were a thing. And
oh, I remember those. Yeah.
Do you? I'm pretty sure like those were taken out of just like circulation by the time we were kids. Like you'd be like, oh, look at ye old, like, you know, we might've had safety lawn darts, but like the actual ones with death spikes on them. So they stuck in the ground.
I remember people talking about them. I've never actually thrown one, but yeah, I remember like mentors talking about them. I don't think I have.
I think I have like just like in an old like garage sale or something. And I actually had an old coworker who told me that like she almost like killed her brother with one of those things. Like, I'm not surprised. As it turns out, you know, telling your children to go out in the backyard and throw spikes at each other is like. Boy, you know, back in the day was a different time.
Yeah, yeah, we have a lot more safety regulations that we have to follow through now. Such buzzkills. Well, anyway, after the death of his father, Thorismund, who displayed great valor, was chosen by the army to take his father's place upon the throne. But he still has business to finish before heading back to home. What business do you have after a battle?
Don't leave your foe standing, for one.
That's probably a good idea. According to our friend Jordanes, after his first real defeat, Attila braced himself for the attack that would obliterate the rest of his army. He went full drama queen and ordered a funeral pyre so that when the inevitable defeat came, he would throw himself into it so that way his body would not be claimed either dead or alive into the power of his enemies.
I can kind of respect it. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong, like, I probably wouldn't just throw myself in. I'd probably be like, okay, let me, like, set up a plan, I guess an elaborate plan or simple plan, and just be like, yeah, we're going to off ourselves, and then I'm going to have my men throw me onto the pyre. Like, because let's be real, Attila the Hun, he's, if he gets caught alive, not only will he just be like paraded throughout like the city in like the worst kind of ways, but also his death is just gonna be like so gruesome. People have received an awful lot worse for doing an awful lot less in those times. So I can't imagine that slitting your own throat or something and then having your men throw you on the pyre is like, that's got to be better.
Oh yeah, and Attila the Hun too, he's got to be an extreme personality. Like, I ain't gonna let them take me out, I'm gonna throw myself into the fire. But the thing is you lost one battle. You're are you really that much of a glass cannon that you lose one battle, you're like, screw it, I'm done, I'm going home? Like,
apparently, if it was that big of a blow. But also, like, if you're just kind of, at least as I understood, is that he had a just kind of a tendency to basically, you know, being nomadic, had a tendency to just kind of like roll around, a lot of kind of eggs in one basket principle.
That is true. That is true. Yes. Yeah. By him only being on horseback, kind of once the air was taken out of his tires, so to speak.
Yeah.
That he was kind of a sitting duck. So I get that.
He's got nowhere to go home to.
Yeah.
Unless he just flees back east, it's not gonna, he's nowhere to go.
Yeah, that's possible. Well, according to Jordanes, quote, Thorsmund was eager to take vengeance for his father's death on the remaining Huns, being moved both by the pain of bereavement and impulse of that valor to which he was noted. Yet he consulted with the patrician Aetius, who with regard to do what he ought to do next, unquote. Jordanes is a wordy man.
Well, a lot of older writings are wordy.
And Jordanes continues, in parentheses, in that quote he put, for he was an older man and more mature of wisdom. So he's basically saying that, like, Thorsmund was this young kid who just took over after his father's death, and he, like, yielded to the advice of this Roman who was apparently more mature of wisdom just because he was older. Granted, Aetius was a fantastic Roman general, so
yeah, get that. But they're not really great allies, as evidenced by the last so many episodes where it's like, we're friends, now we're not, now we are, now we're not. Like, I just,
Yeah, and Jordanes continues, quote, but Aetius feared that the Huns were totally, he feared if the Huns were totally destroyed by the Goths, the Roman Empire would be overwhelmed and then be, urgently advised him to return to his own dominions to take up the rule which his father had left. Otherwise, his brothers might seize their father's possessions and obtain the power over the Visigoths. Unquote. So basically, he is saying, look, you should not go take out the Huns, and you should go, you know, go claim the throne before your brothers take it. But in reality, he's saying, like, oh, to do that on to be on Thorsmund's side, but in reality, he's like afraid that the if the Visigoths were to destroy the Huns and grab all of that Hunnic land that Attila just conquered, that they would be able to be the superpower and Rome would be at their mercy instead.
Yeah. Well, that checks out. But I mean, there is like some logic of kind of like reconsolidating, but I personally would have gone at least one in for one more swipe. Sounds like they really got Attila on the ropes. I think you just gotta like try and finish him off. And
there's so many times in history where if you just finished your enemy off, there'd be so much less death. But because for some reason they let him regroup or something. And Aetius reasoned with Thorsmund, that's going to be a hard king to keep pronouncing, that he would have to fight fiercely and, what is worse, disastrously with his own countrymen. So he's like saying, look, you're going to either, if you don't go home, you're going to have a civil war on your hands. So you should not go out and take on Attila the Hun. This is really good persuasive techniques. This is like textbook manipulation 101 right here.
If every time you left, there was another betrayal at your doorstep, you would just never leave, which granted, if people are really treacherous, I think that's where you have to gauge your other lords. If you think they're really treacherous, then, you know, you may consider heading back to consolidate. Otherwise, you expand.
Yeah. I mean, and Jordaine's, like, to go on that thought, like, Jordaine's said that Thorsmund just accepted this advice. And he, on its face merit of what Aetius was saying, like, he just believed what Aetius was saying at face value. And he completely missed Aetius's double meaning that whether or not, when he goes home, he's going to have to fight his brothers for the throne. And I often don't agree with Jordaine's, and I tend to argue with him, even though he's dead, like a madman while I'm researching this stuff. But I completely agree with him when he says, thus, while human frailty rushes into suspicion, it often loses an opportunity of doing great things. By not taking a risk, you lose, like, a, because you're so afraid of these, your life, and you let fear take over and you don't take those risks, you are not able to become the next, you know, Attila the Hun, the next Alexander the Great, because you're so afraid of your brother usurping the throne.
And those are our inspirational words for the day. Thank you all for listening. So the moral of the story is don't be afraid, take risks, and go be the next Attila, claim an empire.
And this is Scott's TED Talk.
That's right. We could all learn a thing or two from Attila the Hun.
Yes.
Also be dramatic. If you aren't dramatic, then what are you?
Be interesting. That's how history will remember you. And Thorsmund, he's not very interesting. He makes a huge mistake, and it's going to cost him hugely. His fear of being usurped by his brothers prevented him from conquering the Hunnic Empire and being able to control his destiny and the Visigoths' destiny instead of submitting to the Romans.
No one likes those big bad Romans.
No, they've been like the evil empire in Star Wars, but except for, well, I was going to say except for like an incompetent empire, but actually the empire was pretty incompetent in Star Wars. So kind of the same thing.
Well, you know, people aren't perfect.
Well, could you imagine what Attila's, he's like, I'm ready for this battle. I'm ready to die. I'm going to go out with honor. And then he's waiting. He's waiting. And there's crickets. There's nothing.
Yeah, well,
so he went, all right, and shrugged his shoulders. He packed up his bags and then just did his Attila thing by rampaging across his back east, never to be a threat to the Visigoths again.
It sounds like, hindsight being 2020, that taking out the Huns probably wasn't such a high priority thing after all.
Well, here's the thing. When Attila went out east, back east, he exacted a lot of protection money from the Romans as he went rampaging out. They had to pay him big time money to just go away.
That seems like, yeah, I can understand the, if you're in the shoes of the people at the time, you'd be like, yeah, like, let's just finish off like Attila and friends. Let's just get it out of the way because he might come back. But yeah, in hindsight, it really feels like that defeat them or not, as far as at least as far as the Goths are concerned, really not a non-issue, apart from just claiming, you know, lands.
But if they wanted power, and they like every kingdom at this time, they really blew a chance of a lifetime, really, to completely overturn the tides of history. They could all of a sudden now, you know, we're in the Visigoths land of all of Europe and changed, you know, history entirely because of that. But that's just not the way the cookie crumbled, so to speak.
Yeah, it just sounds like a way to lose a lot of men is what it sounds like.
That is true.
That fight is, you know, you get to have a very aggressive claim on the land, but at what cost, right?
Yeah, that is very true. It could be costly. Attila's war ended up costing over 175,000 confirmed people in the Battle of the Catalunian Plains alone. He certainly left his mark upon Europe and earned his "The Scourge of God" title.
I don't even know how they keep the records for all that.
Again, the records, the numbers are often in this time are either overstated or understated. Most of the time it's overstated, but, you know, it's a huge amount of people, like, compared to the process. What he did was insanity. I think in terms of like percentage, I don't think World War II wiped out as much of Europe as Attila did in percentage wise. Obviously, people wise, it's very different, but percentage wise, he set the continent quite a bit back. And in 453, Thorismund received news that Attila the Hun passed away. His mighty empire crumbled immediately. The Ostrogoths, who were Visigoths' biggest rival in the conflict, established a kingdom in Pannonia. Do you know where Pannonia is?
I do not.
It is a Roman territory, which is like east of Italy. Best condensed description is it's got parts of Western Hungary, Eastern Austria, and bits and pieces of the Balkans. So,
okay, I got the picture. Yeah.
Kind of in that area is where they set up shop. So after Attila the Hun was defeated, Thorismund did not get to enjoy his kingdom for very long. Soon after his victory, the Romans and the Visigoths resumed their hostilities over the division of spoils of war from the Huns. So he listened to the Romans and fought them anyway.
Yeah, that's politics for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's predictable. You have the big menace that two rivals team up against, and when the big menace is gone, they go back to being at each other's throats. It happened after World War II. Once the Axis powers were defeated, the West and Russia resumed their disagreements about communism and democracy, which led to the Cold War.
Yeah, and that still doesn't go away. feels like it.
Yeah, and if I remember right, I think even more recent history was like when the United States went into Iraq to overthrow the Saddam Hussein regime. The two like big the religious powers in the time who were, you know, kept in control by Saddam, where all of a sudden no longer had to worry about Saddam. So then they went after each other. So, I mean, it just happens over and over and over and over again.
Such is the way of humans.
Yeah. Well, these hostilities did not go over well with the pro-Roman faction within his kingdom, and therefore rebellion broke out just about when he returned home. And in 453, Thorismund was betrayed and murdered by two of his brothers. That's it. Kind of a disappointing arc.
Well, I guess the warning that he was given by Aetius was ringing true.
Yeah, that's why I like said in the beginning, like I really think if he would have He had the army at his back right there. Who cares if they if they take the throne, you know, back home? He's got the army, and if he defeats Attila the Hun, and then he can incorporate Attila's broken army into his army, his brother's got nothing. So because he was too afraid of being overthrown, the self-fulfilling prophecy is he was overthrown.
Although, do you think those Ostrogoths are going to even consider joining up, though?
I think so. Think about they joined up with the Huns after the Huns defeated them, and alliances were made and broken so many times during this time. It probably would have been into their, benefit to join this victorious army. And then especially if they can go after Rome, who nobody likes at this time, that's pretty good.
I mean, if things were different, I guess, and like things back home did not go well, and he was aware of that because, you know, he had like a precognition or something, or he was just told about it in some way, like, hey, someone back home is, you know, taking over everything. There's just also a chance where he could have also, yeah, just almost become like the European or Western European, like Attila of his own, right? He proceeds to just go back to nomadic ways and just takes the army, just starts, you know, hey, Ostrogoths, join or die, and just starts sweeping across Europe. I'm not saying it's great long term, but yeah, it's a whole lot of what ifs. So
yeah, that's the fun part about history, is there's so many what ifs, and you get to it's kind of fun sometimes to explore that, how all the things would change just by one little action.
Not constructive, but fun.
Thorismund, though, by many sources, was just constantly knocked for how timid he was. And I think there's a lot more we're not seeing, that they constantly were going after him for not continuing to take out the Huns. And I'm starting to believe it's like his overall demeanor was he was not prone to action. And in those days, you needed to be prone to action if you were a king, because they led by, you know, up front. Kings did not just send men to the battle, they were the battle.
I think that's a better description. Yeah, that it's more of a sign of his demeanor rather than actual tactical soundness. Because again, hindsight being a little more 2020, is that like honestly the Huns really weren't a problem post the Battle of Catalonia. Like, it just wasn't. They were basically a non-entity at that point, and, you know, they went back east.
Not to the Visigoths. To the Romans, they were still a problem.
Hey, but, and that's fine. Like, I think that's, you just leave that be to the Romans.
Yeah, that is true.
Like, when you're in Rome, do as the Romans do and backstab everybody. Like, you know, hell, they could have even just, like, if you're feeling really greedy, just fight Rome right then and there. You're like, all right, let's go.
Like, that would have been kind of fun to watch. It would be interesting.
The true betrayal. Just like, hey, great job beating them Huns. And then, oh, by the way.
Well, they kind of did it anyway. As soon as, like, they were trying to figure out the dividing the spoils of war, they fought over that, so they both kind of just turned on each other right away.
Yeah. It felt like that there was just like a, you know, like at least a moment where they're like, maybe we ought to like think about this as buddies. And then, we're not buddies anymore.
It was like they put a face on that they're friends for a hot second and then went, nope, never mind. I can't do this. Well, this is the first betrayal by a monarch's family in our show, and this is not the last one by a long shot.
Gasp. European monarch's betrayal? Never heard of it.
Scott, that's 3 assassinations and 6 kings. Would you take those odds to rule this kingdom?
I wouldn't want to rule any kingdom, to be honest. Like, yeah, there's one, paranoia, but 2, I have to admit, is that my life as a middle class person today is light years ahead of any king or emperor back way back then.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't even...
I will take my indoor plumbing and electronics and less disease.
We're gonna have to keep track of this assassination, because that percentage of assassination versus kings that died not being assassinated is gonna continue to go up.
Well, I guess you can figure out which factions are the most murderous.
Yeah, we'll have to put like different things later on our website when we create one to show the different like percentages of if you were a king in this faction, there was a 50% shot you'd be assassinated, 30% shot you'd be, you know, die of sickness or in battle and things like that. So how long do you think he reigned based on this story?
Did he even make it a year? Like, I can't imagine it went well.
He reigned from 451 to 453, so about 2 years, probably closer to 1 year, I'd have to agree with you. That's all I got for Thorsmund. Are you ready to rate him?
Yeah, with what we got.
Alrighty, for the real Game of Thrones, how he played. He's kind of a mixed bag. In war, he's a major reason why Attila the Hun was defeated. I mean, if it wasn't for his charge, maybe Attila wouldn't have won, because Attila was on the upper hand until that happened. It's the only positive thing, but it's a huge thing.
That's like military tactics to me. Doesn't feel like of any like level of politics.
That is true. Yeah.
Just like, I, not to say that he was completely replaceable. Military tactics is not exactly a God-given gift to every single man, woman, and child.
Well, and he did not set that up. Aetius set that up.
Doesn't feel like he really has anything going for him. If you're just talking from like a politics thing, existed long enough, and I guess he managed to keep peace with Rome long enough to basically not cause infighting, at least, you know, in the during the battle, even though I know that it would have been under the previous king's rule, and then obviously, like, you know, for the short period after, like, you know, what was probably just like a few months.
I mean,
so
after you just talked, like, it's just that after we discussed that, he's such a non-entity. Like, yeah, you could have put a dummy or you know, my weekend at Bernie's, you know, the king, someone to ride down into that battle.
All I know is he was at least on good enough terms with Aetius to be able to talk after the fight. I think that's about as good boy points he's going to get, but
yeah,
everything else is downhill.
I mean,
there,
he couldn't hold his nobles, and a rebellion broke out that he was not quashed, and he was assassinated by two of his brothers. You're not good at the Game of Thrones if you get assassinated. Clearly, he wasn't doing something right. So the only benefit he has is he defeated Attila the Hun, but as you kind of just discussed and brought to my attention, he didn't even really do that. It was the Roman tactic, so
he's right place at the right time.
So I think he was a non-entity. I'm gonna give him 0. I don't think he added anything. He could, if it not existed, and I don't think things would change, except for the fact that his brothers assassinated him, which sets a precedent. But other than that,
yeah, pretty much political non-entity. Yeah, he'll get a 0. As much as I'd like to give him at least 1 point, I don't think that's really worth the point.
So that's a 0 for both of us. So 0 out of 20. Alrighty, so for Royal Mischief, I don't know if you found anything in that story, but I could not find anything. The sources were scarce on him. Wikipedia had like less than a paragraph on this guy. There was nothing.
Yeah, the most mischief he probably had was like the daggers in his back.
that he, yeah, that he was assassinated. I'm gonna have to give him zero.
Yeah, he gets a whopping zero.
Alrighty, religious passion.
He might have prayed to God as he was getting stabbed in the back.
Yeah, he was probably Aryan, like the rest of the Visigoths at this time. But I got nothing.
I like where this is going. So zeros?
Zero.
All right. We're off to a great start.
Fantastic start. Alignment. Again, I feel like we got more character from Sigurik, who ruled for 7 days, than Thorismund, who ruled for almost 2 years. I'm going to have to go true neutral, zero.
You know, if I were to give him a point anywhere, this would be probably about as close as he's going to get. You could make the argument, and this is loose. Loose. I'd probably still give him zero, but... You can try and go for the lawful approach in the sense that he tried to regain order back, supposedly, after being persuaded, but like persuaded by Aetius. But yeah, he just didn't really have enough time to do anything. If there was any like establishing law and order and consolidation, this man was not it. Yeah. That's as close as he's going to get.
Yeah.
So if I could give him a quarter of a point, he could get that, but no.
I'm giving him zero.
Zero. All right. On to the next.
Stability. He had a divided kingdom over pro and anti-Romans, and he was killed while a rebellion was breaking out. Zero. If I could give negative points, I would. Zero.
Yeah. I wouldn't give him negative points because, again, he's like a non-entity like most things. Like, again, if you plopped anyone else there, there was a chance that like they would have done just about as good. But yeah, so zeros.
Dynasty. He might get some points here. He is the king that he's the king that turned the tide and defeated Attila the Hun. But we discussed that's not really him. That was more the Roman commander.
Yeah, but if you're talking just like a level of being able to, establish something for your family or, you know, your dynasty, is that he still was the man to swoop down the hillside. Whether or not he orchestrated it is, like, I think that's entirely true. Irrelevant. Like, he all still right. gets his badass points for the day.
That is true. That is pretty points.
One badass point.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and the only other thing, his brother went on to rule after him. So dynasty that his family continued after him. Granted, his brother assassinated him. So.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
What it tells me is that apparently he was, and this is a loosey-goosey thing, especially if his brother assassinated him, is that he didn't muck things up so royally that like people like this whole like family line, this ain't cutting it anymore, like
that's true.
You know, there's still a little bit of faith in the family tree. It's just that this guy just happened to be there and they're like, yeah, you're the guy who went down the hill, you know, you're filled with rage that your dad died, that probably makes you a fine enough king for now, right? So, you know, he gets 1 point, at least for me.
Yeah, I'll give him 1 point, and that's just for him thundering down the battle. He just narrowly missed being a complete zero.
I don't know how many complete zeros we'll have, but yeah, he gets a total of 2 points. Across all categories.
Out of 100. Solid stuff.
Yeah. Well, can't all be winners. And it goes without saying, but he's no Alaric, so...
He had to bring Alaric in. You missed him.
He's episode one. How can you... how can you not have him... bring him up all the time? Throughout this whole Gothic line...
Yeah,
like he's the main man.
He is.
He gave them so much.
He's the OG, as it were.
Yeah. He's the man to be raised on a shield, and everyone else gets the same treatment. So,
alrighty,
make Alaric turn over in his grave.
Yeah. So since he has 2 out of 100, I'm not even gonna ask like who he's near, because he's near no one. Who's the next one? Who was the lowest before him?
He's nearest the peasant. That's where he's nearest. Sigaric, you know, or actually, no, or I'm sorry, yeah, Sigaric, the man who ruled for like what, a week.
Yeah,
it's nice to know that Sigaric got more brownie points in 1 week than Thorismund got in 1 to 2 years.
Alrighty, so do we raise him to High King, reduce him to a lesser lord, or burn him at the stake?
Charcoal.
Burn him.
Charcoal.
Burn him. Yeah. No. Burn him. He's done. Let his eternal soul rest in peace as he is set ablaze.
Rest in pasta.
Alrighty. Scott, do you have anything to say about this non-entity we named Thorismund?
I am hoping that the next king does not start with a TH. I guess we have that. This one was pretty much he kind of mucked things up.
Oh, I'm going to let you in on a little secret that your hopes are going to be dashed. His brother is named Theodoric II.
Ah.
So. Well,
God, that's even worse. I already mixed this guy up with Theodoric enough as it is. Now we have Theodoric, at least he'll be the second.
Yeah,
I might be able to work with that. But if you catch me calling him like Thorimund, or oh god, did you say Theodoric or Theodosius? Because I can't keep track of
Theodoric the second is the new okay king.
Yeah, this is gonna be rough. All right.
Alrighty. Before we close, we want to thank all of you listeners for listening to our rambling. We tried to give you the best we could with the content that we had this week. Thank you for supporting our podcast. It really means a lot to us. We put a lot of work into this and appreciate you listening. If you like this story, please tell a friend or family member about it. And if you want to go the extra mile, please give us a review on whatever platform you use. Give us 5 stars and it'll really help us out and hopefully drive us a little bit up the charts. And we can add in a little more sound effects and a little more funny things for you guys. If you have any comments or questions, please message us on Facebook. Until next time, the king is dead.
Long live the king.